Well, so then, yes, the podcast thing.
Podcast.
Thank you for joining us. Have a good night.
This episode of Bird Life brought to you by Mammal Food. Oh,
so is God. This like the hippies back in the 70s where they would like buy cat food or dog food and mix it with milk?
Pretty much.
Ooh, yeah.
Pretty much.
I'm not surprised.
did they do that in the 70s?
Yeah, it was kind of a common thing.
Never heard about that.
The hippies who lived out of their back of their vans and stuff like that? Yeah, like when things were really dire and they were poor, it would be straight to the dog food.
Yep.
I think there are people that still eat dog food.
Yeah, but they tend to be our attendees.
Attend a FurCon, pay for food. Attend a FurCon, pay for food.
So tell us how you really feel.
that our attendees are some of the best people in the world.
Yeah, so Texas Furry Fiesta just passed. How's the ramp down going for you? The wind down?
So, Furry Fiesta just ended. We had 3,325 attendees. 3,325. So, we had grown by 500 attendees. It was a pretty busy year. And a lot of changes going on. And our convention is less than 10 months away because of our date change.
Yeah.
So, we're already in ramp-up mode for that convention. We didn't get a lot of break this year.
Ouch.
Oh, it's called This Is Why You Do It for the Love.
Yeah. As I said, a lot of cool changes. We've got a new hotel. It's going to be our 10th year. It's a lot of work to try to put on the best convention we've ever put on.
Oh my gosh, it's been 10 years.
It's been 10 years.
Oh,
and they put a griffin in charge of the 10th year. God,
correct.
Couldn't ask for a finer leadership.
So 10 years of bird.
I remember when the convention was started by three other podcasters way back in the day.
Yes, long ago.
Now, I've got to ask, how long have you been on staff at TFF in any capacity?
I've been on staff for 5 years now. The first four is head of security, and then this last year is vice chair. So yes, my first year of staff was head of security of a major furry convention.
I'm sure that went over well.
I've never staffed any other convention either, so that was my first year of staff at all.
That's intensely...
jumping in with both feet?
I guess, yeah.
I started my staff career on hard mode. Tutorial skip.
So how involved?
What's the worst thing that could happen?
Oh,
go ahead.
I was just going to say, so how involved is the local community with the actual organization and structuring of Texas Furry Fiesta?
It's pretty involved. In Texas, it's difficult to define local community because Texas, where people that we consider local, everybody else considers regional. We have significant staff from Austin, which is a 3-hour drive. Ugh. We've got significant staff from Houston, which is a 4-hour drive.
Holy cow.
Yeah, and those are short distances within the state.
Right. Yeah, it's Texas definitely is huge.
Oh, yeah. From Dallas, it's faster to drive to Florida than the other side of Texas, El Paso. The shorter distance to go to Florida than El Paso.
Yeah, no kidding. Texas itself is, what, twice the landmass of Great Britain?
That sounds right. Maybe even more. It's very significant landmass, but we've got a lot of engaged locals. We do have some staff scattered across the world, or at least across the country, from North Carolina to El Paso to other areas. We have some incredible staff. We have about 160 staff, and we're always growing because we always have to. We're always looking for good talent.
That's good. That's really good that you're growing so rapidly. I hope it's not like too much growing pains, but
we're growing about 20% a year, which means that if you can do math, we double every 3.5 years our attendance.
And has that been the trend so far? Have you doubled since 3 years ago?
Yes.
Nice.
We've been growing roughly 20% a year since the beginning. There's been a couple slight dips down from that, down to, I think, 17 or 16% growth. And our first year, we had a huge spike.
Okay.
But we're still on track. And it's not just Fiesta. We are growing slightly faster than the average convention, but most conventions are growing 20% a year. It's a combination of the improving economy and furry is becoming more mainstream. There are more furries. Furry is cool. It's growing.
Is that a good thing for furry to be popularizing, though?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I guess from a financial standpoint.
No, I'm not even talking that. I'm talking if this is something that people are finding enjoyment in and finding fulfillment in, of course it should grow. Because that means more people are experiencing those things, are being better and having better lives because of it.
Yeah.
Of course, it's a good
thing. That's true. It's a good answer.
The only downside, or one of the downsides, is that it gets harder and harder to get hotel rooms at cons.
Which is why we moved to a bigger hotel.
Yeah. The thing is with, for example, Eurofer, and they hit the limit totally this year. Within, I think, an hour, everything was booked out, and since so many furries wanted to book a hotel room at the same time, the servers crashed from the hotel.
Yeah.
Or from the service who does the booking for the hotels. And oh my god, it was horror. It was horror. And I did not get a room, and then I needed to. Some people made triple bookings and stuff because, oh my god, it was chaos. It was
absolutely. Go ahead.
Well, with regard to the growing of cons, because I've been on staff at Indie Fur Con since year one, or year zero, as we call it, when it was just a pizza party. We were laughing, saying, "Huh, I wonder what that would be like." So we're over 1,000 attendees now, and one of the things I've noticed when cons keep growing and growing and growing is the struggle is not whether the con can keep growing as long as you have good leadership, but whether you can maintain the atmosphere that drew people to that convention to begin with. And for me, that is my biggest draw, because no offense, if you love Anthrocon and whatnot, go have fun. It's a great con in its own way. But when a con gets past a certain point, it really struggles to maintain that, because it just becomes another huge con. Yes. Whereas MFF is, for now, been able to maintain the same feeling to an extent that I got when I first went to it in 2006, even though it's huge now. But that's partially because of the hotel they picked as well. So, sort of, what are you guys doing to try to mitigate that effect?
The thing that we're doing the most is that we're not focused on growth. I talk about 20% growth as a good thing, but we're not trying to grow. We're trying to have the best convention we can. And we measure, one of the ways we measure our success is growth rate, but it's not the only way. And that's not our end game. Our end game is to throw the best convention we can, which means we're always focusing on improving. We're always trying to take new ideas, creative things. We're trying to make Fiesta better. And if that means more people show up, great.
I think that just kind of goes hand in hand. If you have a good con, more people are going to want to come, yeah.
Yes.
So before we get too involved here, maybe we should introduce ourselves. And, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
What episode is it, Core?
This is episode 25. Not whatever the heck you're trying to put in chat here, Fleeks. There's no letters in this system. 25 of Bird Life.
E24, 23, 24.
Yeah, we're not doing exponents. No. There's no exponential value.
You guys have been going a lot longer than I thought.
No kidding. We've been going since the Jurassic era.
But anyways, I'm Fleeks.
I'm Core.
I'm Sir Chirps-a-Lot.
He's Storm. And joining us this week, we have...
Sable Griffin.
Welcome.
Woo! Who are you, Sable Griffin? Why are you here?
I wandered in for the millet.
That delicious millet.
I am Sable Griffin. I am the con chair of Furry Fiesta. One of the many Sables.
Yes. Not to be confused with the chilly, insane, loving, vape crazy Sable Dracon, who we'll have one day in the future. Totally different Griffin.
Or... The Chimera, or the Panda.
Oh, yeah. Three of the many Sables ordered a shirt from me, and it was like... and two of them are from Texas, and then all of that was like, what? I got so confused with that, so because I thought it would be that is the same person, just with two identities or something, you know what I mean?
And you just wanted two shirts?
And they had both Griffins, too. That was so like, what?
We need actually to stick them in a room together and make them fight to the death.
Well,
actually, the hilarious thing on that point is that at FWA, three of us Sables go. The Chimera is in charge of the art show, and there's Sable Dracon and I, and we have a mini SableCon, and it's awesome.
Gosh.
What happens at a SableCon?
We mostly hang out being Sables.
You just sit there and talk about color?
Yeah. Yeah. But we all look it up when somebody says, hey, Sable.
What happens at SableCon stays at SableCon. So I've got to ask you a question, flipping back to the convention stuff for just a second here. What do you think about the trend that some of the more niche cons are doing, and that is they actually place an attendance limit? And if you don't get in between 1,200 or 1,500, whatever the limit is, sorry, see you next year.
Attendance caps are tricky. Sometimes they're necessary. You only have certain space on at the venue, or you do something special and there's limited space. There are certain reasons that you might be required to have a cap. Yeah. Then there are voluntary caps. We don't want our convention to get above a certain amount. We don't want whatever the reason is. There are multiple reasons to try to institute a cap specifically.
Yeah.
And then you have caps that are not announced, which is like further confusion, which doesn't have a cap, but they are in a venue that does not allow growth, so they've reached a natural equilibrium.
Right.
At some point, it just becomes like a you know, Burning Man kind of thing where people are in the lottery for it.
Yes. One of the things that I always had an issue with caps, fully recognizing that there are totally valid reasons to have one, is that you've got to be very careful with them. Because when you have a cap of attendance, you also end up with a set number of staff, which means that you're not bringing any new blood in. Occasionally, every year, a few people leave or come, but that's not the same as trying to grow and therefore incorporating new staff with new ideas. The risk you have with a capped con is that it's going to be very stale very quickly. And you talked about earlier, Storm, wanting a convention to feel the same. But that's not necessarily the same as having a convention that is the same year to year. Because part of what that wonderful feeling was, especially in the early days, is seeing all the new stuff they were doing.
Yeah, that's very true. It's very true. You don't want it to go stagnant. But
right.
In the case of like Indie Fur Con and, for me, MFF, the con has a very welcoming feeling. People are very sociable. And it's not to say all furry cons don't have that to an extent, because I've been to a lot of cons, and they do.
Yeah.
But these cons in particular,
yeah,
it's just there's something to do with the culture, the people it attracts, the types of programming they encourage to run.
Right.
Allows for that atmosphere to continue, at least from my experience.
I think the fact that it's in Texas actually has a huge thing to do with it. The cities of Texas are some of the most friendly places there are.
Yes.
I do have one question I want to ask you, though. So, going into this, becoming the new con chair, is there anything you wish you knew going into it that you learned kind of along the way so far?
Well, I haven't actually been con chair yet, because I was vice chair this last year.
Right.
I'm sure I will find a lot more examples of that. But the biggest shock for me was not becoming con chair. It was becoming head of security. As I said, that was my first year of staff as head of security. There's plenty I wish I had known going in.
And there's no easy... That's not an easy thing to do in any capacity.
Correct. It was tough, but I think I made it work. I think I created a great team. I got some great staff to help me, and most of my success is theirs.
Creating conventions is becoming a very popular thing to do now. There's constantly little ones popping up and growing, and whether they catch or not is a whole nother thing. What kind of advice would you give to someone who is starting a convention?
That's a loaded question. There's so much that goes into this. It's not something that I could just say, here's this magic pill, magic formula. You do this, you have a successful con. There's a lot of work that goes into this. It's going to be difficult. And it's also going to remember that the people you start building the convention with are not necessarily the same people you will have created a convention with. There's going to be some turnover. There's going to be personality conflicts. People are going to come into it with ideas that are contrary or directly opposing others in that core group. People are going to leave. There's going to be harsh words. You've got to remember that everybody has the same goal, which is creating a successful convention. And you can't let sometimes heated conversations stop that dream. Further, you've got to remember that you may not be the only ones in town, especially once a large convention like Rainforest dies. You see multiple, I call them successor cons, successor states pop up that are competing for that region, and rarely do all of them survive. Usually it's just one.
That's true.
And that is not a castigation of the failed cons. When you're in a regional area, when you're in a region, there's only so many staff to go around. So while your populace may be awesome, we've got two conventions, let's go to them both, you don't necessarily have the staff resources to pull two off.
Especially if they're run by the same group, yeah.
Correct. It's very difficult. So remember, you're not the only game in town, and they may have to with or absorb or merge with other groups that are trying to do the same thing.
Yeah, and the truer words have never been spoken. Seriously,
right?
It's a labor of love. The most of the crew we started out with at Indie FurCon are not there today, and I've seen it all because I've been there since the beginning. And one of the last remaining people that are originals on staff. But if you're willing to keep your mind focused on what the end goal is, and just willing to work together to compromise, to fundraise, to do whatever it takes with a positive attitude in the long run, the dream won't die.
I guess two other bits of advice that are critical for those starting a convention. The first is don't overestimate your room block. That's the absolute fastest way for a convention to die. Is they say, oh, we're going to be super successful, so we'll have our room block at X. And then they get X minus 100, which means they're on the hook for 100 room nights.
That'll kill your pocket fast.
It's over. If you overestimate your room block, you've killed your convention. You might survive. RMFC did that the first year. They were able to dig themselves out at that time and survive for more years. But if you make sure you're doing a realistic projection, talk with everybody that you can to get that projection as good as possible before you sign a contract.
Mm.
The other is that conventions require seed money. It means that there's going to be money out of your pocket or out of the pocket of somebody, usually several somebodies, to start a convention. And they're never going to see that money back. It doesn't matter if you try to make a for-profit convention. Whatever you put into the first year con, you're probably not getting back.
Yeah, in the very least for a few years unless you take off, yeah.
Generally only the first year, I've found. Hmm. Maybe the second, but the first year is when you have the outlay. After that, you've got registration money and things like that that are coming in that allow you to fund forward.
Mm.
But that first year is not entirely, but mostly out of pocket.
Yep. Mm. Very true. A convention, 100% accurate.
Yeah, that's like when I had the first concerts with my band, it was like all of pocket money. More or less, we spend on our concerts.
Just to be able to book the venue.
Yeah, just to book the venue and to invite other bands, some good headliner and stuff.
So, yeah. Fleeks, I believe we had a topic this week, something along the lines of having our own bird convention, right?
Yeah, our topic today is BirdCon with you. And, well, generally we'll talk about a furry con with focus on birds, so to say a feathery con.
Yeah.
And a follow-up question to you, Sable.
Birds when only, no cats, no dogs, no wolves, nope, get out. Only birds.
When will you remain the furry fiesta to feathery fiesta?
I can neither confirm nor deny these allegations.
Now, I tell you right now, if we're going to do a bird con, right, you're going to do it right, there's got to be a gigantic bird bath. I'm talking, I don't care if it's hotel's pool. You got to convert it, get it heated, get some bubbles in there, something. It's got to be bird bath.
Yeah, bird bath is important.
So, go ahead.
It's important to remember that this is going to be a giant flock fest.
There are two ways you could take that phrase. So, that said, I actually do have a patent pending idea. For conventions, and it's kind of like, I want to call it like the roost, or, you know, it's just some sort of like nest cool off area where you have a nice enclosed space, maybe even like a tent kind of thing. And inside this tent, you have just these plush, cushy, everything just to lay down on, some soothing music, some ambient lights, and even like misters, just to create like an atmosphere where everything cools off, like an upgraded headless lounge almost, except not just for the headless.
Sounds very Arabian.
Arabian?
Yeah, Arabian.
Fair enough.
We are not talking about the
pillows, the gauzy curtains, the birds on display.
It's exactly what I have in mind. Hammocks, pillows, cushions. No inappropriate touching, obviously, but
of course.
Take that to your room. But, you know, something along those lines where, you know, when you get... Because the one thing that happens to me and quite a few people that I know at conventions is overstimulation. You're there, you get way overhyped, like, you know, meeting new people, going and doing all these things. And then you take a step back for a moment and you realize that you are fried mentally. And you need to go chill out for a second.
That purpose fulfilled at Scandinavian cons... this purpose is fulfilled by the silent sauna. This is it's so great, really.
You'll see in larger non-furry conventions, places like large anime conventions or gaming conventions, that they have at least one quiet place. Space.
Yeah.
Place where you can just go to decompress and get away from the throngs and the crowds. It's harder for furry conventions to do it because of size. Not impossible, but generally the furry conventions are too small to get significant or effective use out of a quiet space. That doesn't mean we shouldn't explore it, just that we haven't seen it be successful yet.
Well, I know that at Sponsors Lounge, IFC, outside of, you know, meal rush times, actually doubles as a quiet space that people go to,
yes,
and relax and escape and have maybe a drink or something, and then when they're ready they can go back and hit the con floor and have fun again. So putting, you know, the bird spin on this, having a place for birds to go and unwind sounds great, but since we're talking, I just brought up Sponsors Lounge, con suite in general. What kind of snacks and whatnot will we put?
Millet.
Millet.
We're all slightly addicted to millet here.
And grub. Grub is important.
Yes.
He's addicted to grub. I'm not so much.
Well, I don't know. For Griffins, I'm thinking premium cuts of steak cooked to your liking, which would mean barely cooked at all.
You know what? Repopularize the Roadkill Cafe.
Really?
That stuff is in the restaurant. You don't want to take money out of there. We're just talking about snacks.
Oh, okay. Yeah, like a snack table. Gotcha.
The Griffins will get horse jerky.
Horse jerky.
Unicorn jerky.
Yeah. Yeah. Then again, you got to realize a Griffin-sized snack would feed fleeks for like a week, so it's all relative.
Depends on the size of the Griffin, though. I've seen some very tiny Griffins.
Well, of course. They're, you know, your mileage may vary when it comes to size.
For example, we have Juco Griffin, who is a tiny 50-pound pink griffin.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
I carry him around in a papoose.
Oh, yeah.
What about you, Cor? You want millet as well, or is there other food items?
No, I usually like at least day-old left-out-in-the-sun meat. You know, it's like halfway jerky, but it's not. It's just that right amount of toughness, you know? I'm a raven. I'm a scavenger. Get it right. I'm funny, damn it.
Now, I guess the next transition naturally would be to programming.
Yeah, what panels would exist on a BirdCon?
Well, one of the things you're going to find is that...
I'm sorry. I can totally imagine some smart-ass Griffin running a panel called How to Train Your Dragon.
Yeah, absolutely. That's a given. That's the center square in bingo.
I'm liking this episode a little bit more right now.
You'll find that when you're running a convention, generally, you don't have any input on the panels. Those are what people bring to you and say, hey, I want to run this thing. And you go, great, here's your time. The thing you focus on are the big things when you're talking programming. You're talking the headlining events, opening, closing ceremonies, the things that you're paying money to bring into the convention. So all the panels like How to Train Your Dragon, those are great. But those are going to come to you. You're going to need to focus on the bands and the the shows.
Yeah. Okay. So the big name. Or big events. So I can totally see Birds rocking out to some kind of rock concert or something. And that turns into a rave after. Why the hell not?
Yeah. Well, and of course, you need a multi-layered rave. So you're going to have all these bars strung up, the iron bars strung up for people to perch on. And probably, oh, instead of iron bars, make them giant glow sticks.
Oh, I'm digging this. Digging this.
We would still need to have the cage for birds to dance in.
Of course. But you know it's going to be domed on top.
Yes.
Of course, of course. Of course. Or and the cage can double as a holding pen for birds that act naughty. See? Works perfectly well.
Yeah.
Okay, so you got that going on. And then if there's going to be bars, you know, at the rave, you know, birds got to get their booze on. And bars traditionally at furry cons come up with really weird names for drinks. So what would be some avian-themed drinks?
Mm-hmm. Oh, now we're creating bird cocktails?
Yes.
I like the cockatiel.
Nice.
Well, oh, it's just our variant of a white Russian with a little bit of lime.
Just plain and simple cocktail. A cocktail. You know what I mean? Because that's as furry as it gets. You know what I mean? I don't know.
The rooster tail.
Yeah, a rooster tail. A very colorful one. Then the...
I could see that as a spin on the a Bloody Mary, actually.
Ooh, a Griffin's Delight.
That sounds more like a weed.
Yeah.
Not a fucking weed. It would be something... Griffin, I'm thinking something that's like a white Russian... Only with some kind of almost like cotton candy on top. Sounds kind
of
cool.
I don't think. How would cotton candy survive in the atmosphere of a beverage?
No, you put it right on top and then it would slowly melt in.
Okay.
Fridays has something similar. It's kind of cool.
How about a cocktail that's very strong and we are calling it Toucaned?
Toucaned. Okay.
Like you can't,
Well, the two cans are just going to be two bottles of the cheapest beer. Speaking of, what are you guys drinking tonight?
Right, that's usually the question that we should ask.
I was waiting for it, but no.
I'm so sorry. Since Griffin's first, I am drinking a Rolling Rock Extra Pale Premium Beer.
I'm drinking some Redstone Meadery honey wine with vanilla bean and cinnamon sticks.
So we have Red Rock and Redstone. Right on.
Oh my god, Sable just captured my heart. Holy shit, that sounds amazing.
Oh, it's so good.
Oh,
I'm not very fancy today with my Tucher Urbräu.
Sounds
what? Fancy to us.
Yeah, but it's just an pale ale, more or less.
Oh, just your basic pale ale. Okay. I think I'm the only one who's actually not drinking a proper beer this week. Damn. I'm drinking a Cayman Jack's margarita.
Ooh.
Mine has no beer anywhere near it.
So no, wait, no, say yours again?
Yours is like the definition of frou-frou. It's awesome.
Yeah. It's
mead. Okay.
It's Viking frou-frou.
Pretty much.
I had a honey mead. Not too long, but it was also a honey mead wine. I bought it up in Idaho, and it was probably the worst mead wine, whatever it was, I've ever had.
Hold on. You've been to Idaho?
It's like it's like 2 hours away from me.
I grew up in that state. I'm surprised anybody else has ever been there.
I went to lava hot springs.
Oh yeah, I've been there many times.
Idaho, you know, it's the place that all those magical potatoes come from. You know, people got to visit it once in a while.
The great thing about Idaho is nobody's ever been there, so I can make up anything I want to about that state.
I've been to Idaho. It's a state that has a lot of potatoes. That's pretty much all there is to say about Idaho.
I've been there three times. Once as a kid for a horse show, second time to buy a dog, and the third time was for Lava Hot Springs. The first two times were really underwhelming.
Yeah. Lava Hot Springs is nice, though.
It is. We should have a bird bath party at Lava Hot Springs some point.
Yes.
Yes, I'm all in favor of this. That's happening. Absolutely.
That's where we can have our bird con.
How many people do you think we'd be able to lure come up to Idaho?
You throw the word Hot Springs in there, I think you'd get quite a few from Washington and Oregon as well.
My favorite quote that's been floating around Twitter is the names for new furry conventions, and one of them is Six Furs in Idaho.
Oh gosh.
Really?
Yes. Now that you're at names, how would the BirdCon be called except BirdCon?
I still think Flockfest.
I like Flockfest. I like Flockfest a lot. Or CawCon.
How about we are doing it in Texas and then we are calling it the TFF?
Texas Feathery Fiesta.
I might be able to make this happen.
Texas Fest.
Hey, Texas Feathery Fiesta, and then, you know, one of the members of programming could be us. We can be one of the shows. There we go. Hell, we got the con chair on the show right now. I'm sure he can go and squawk in the right ears. I mean, they work below him.
Yeah, I mean, all we need to do is, block off one whole section of the hotel for ourselves and just prevent anybody who's not a bird from getting in.
Warn you that 90% of my head is feather, so all of the ideas are gone the moment I sleep tonight.
It's okay. It is forever recorded on this episode of the podcast.
Thank you. Forever motored a lot.
We can hold you to these promises.
Now, furry cons typically have games. Or like at IFC, we've got a Nerf war. Take over the main events and just shoot the shit out of each other with guns. It's hilarious. So what kind of crazy ass games would BirdCon have?
Joust?
Face jousting?
Yeah, you remember the video game Joust, which is all about jousting on birds? There you go. Done.
No, I actually don't know of that game. What? You have to talk to me about this.
Okay, it's an ancient arcade game. I think late 70s, early 80s, where you play a character riding a bird, and you're trying to joust with other birds.
I need this game in my life, like right now.
How have you not seen this game?
I don't know. I'm trying to find it now.
I never heard about this game too, and I don't even understand. What was the name?
Joust.
What means joust?
Like
medieval jousting.
Knights using lances on each other.
On horses.
Yes.
Except they're on ostriches in this game. I just got it pulled up. This looks fantastic.
Never, ever, ever challenge Core, because if you perk his interest, Google will be opened up within three chirps or less.
Good.
Guaranteed.
Learning. Awesome.
My Google foo is strong.
And it's one of the most well-known arcade games ever, so Joust will bring it up instantly.
It's on the Atari. I don't have an Atari. I need to get one now.
Or you can get an Atari emulator for your PC.
It's true, but it wouldn't be the same.
Yeah, but getting Atari to play on a modern LCD TV doesn't quite look as good as it did on your grandma's 1988 tube TV.
Which means you need to get grandma's 1988 tube TV.
Exactly, and I can just totally go to like a Savers or something, and find one there.
You can go to Goodwill. Oh, I just see a screenshot of the game. I know that. I think it is often paradised in series and stuff. So I think it was paradised in Family Guy once. And
so is it? I'm guessing it's some sort of multiplayer. Like you have two joystick input, I'm sure.
I don't remember if the original was multiplayer or not. You were usually against the AI. I know there are variants where it is two-player.
Fleeks, I did manage to find an online version that you can have multiplayers. We're going to have to, go against each other at some point.
Yeah, definitely. We have to record it.
This episode of Bird Life was brought to you by Noctisul.
We know the problems of million nocturnal birds. Sleeping in the night can be a hassle. But the modern society happens at daytime. We know a place where hooting and restless nights yield to restful sleep. Noctisul can help you get there, how it has for so many owls before. Make the day your night. Become a diurnal bird with Noctisul. When taking Noctisul, don't fly or operate a machinery. Hooting, screaming, walking, flying, moving, eating and other activities without remembering it the next day have been reported. Abnormal behavior may include aggressiveness, agitation, irritation, hallucinating or confusion. Depressions, including attempts to suicide, may occur. Alcohol may increase those risks. Allergic reactions like tongue or throat swelling occur rarely. Side effects may include respiratory failure, vomiting, heart attacks, headache, dizziness, sleeping troubles, sudden death, cancer, blindness, losing of feathers, numbness. Ask your doctor if Noctisul is right for you, then get Noctisul at noctisul.beep. There is a land of nocturnal days. We can help you fly there. Noctisul.
Well, every convention has its own set of horror stories. So, what sort of craziness would happen at BirdCon that we try to keep hidden?
Nocturnal birds would scream the whole night.
Yeah, we would have to give them their own room block in a separate tower.
They would need some Noctisul.
I could totally see a fight breaking out over, who stole my worm? You stole my worm!
No, I'll tell you where you're going to have the most conflict that you're going to have to keep under control. It's when the roosters wake up in the morning and start antagonizing the night owls who are drunk and possibly hungover.
Oh, fucking early birds, man. I hate them. I'll be partying right along with the night owls.
And also...
Right on.
The paramedics would have a lot of trouble with oil birds who are sleeping the whole day. So it's like... but that has potential for an event.
Well, if you want to see trouble, just wait until the hummingbirds get a hold of energy drinks.
They don't even need the energy drinks.
Yes, but you know they're going to drink them anyway.
Little tiny feathery explosions.
Yes. Oh my god, a hummingbird on like, you know, a 5-hour energy shot. Holy
it would pop.
Shit.
It would just...
It would explode.
All need to burn and start to burn.
Either that, or hey, you got what is that? You got a log cabin you need torn down? Don't worry about it. I got 2 hummingbirds and a 12-pack of Monster. We'll get this shit down in 30 minutes or less.
Well, and you know, you're gonna have problems with the woodpeckers destroying the walls.
No, we're civilized.
That's why you put them in the concrete rooms in the basement. You should know this, Sable.
Yes, you're supposed to do that, but they're going to escape. You know this.
It's true. For a creature that smacks its head against hard objects all day, they are pretty intelligent.
Yeah, wait until the woodpeckers get to the rave and start headbanging.
Oh, no. We're going to need to have paramedics on standby.
I don't know what's worse, the woodpeckers headbanging or the birds that are drunk trying to keep up with the woodpeckers headbanging and end up hurting themselves and knocking themselves out.
Just imagine a secretary would like do violent dancing, like you know that kind of dance that is in metal crowd, a thing everybody hates them. They are kicking in the air and stuff.
We already established in a previous episode that peacocks can pretty much do anything we want them to. I think peacocks would be really good go-go dancers at the ball.
Yes, yeah. The next problem you're going to have is hopefully nobody sets off the fire sprinklers. Because if they do, you're going to have to drag the turkeys out of there.
Why?
Yeah, you're going to have to drag the turkey, and you're going to have some very, very unhappy birds.
The ducks are going to love it.
That's true.
Yeah, the duck were.
Has anybody ever actually met a turkey fur?
Once.
I have not.
Not
I've
met.
Seen art. You'll see art every November.
It's true. But never, ever actually met one myself.
Don't remember me of that art. Oh, my God.
Well, unless you're into the idea of being eaten, and there are some that enjoy
and
that.
Stuffed.
More stuffed, yes.
Well, yeah, the stuffing, of course, that's a given. This is the furry fandom. But unless you're into being eaten, you're not probably going to want to be a turkey that often. Though turkeys get to be some big fucking birds, man.
Which brings us to an important point about our convention, is that we can't have it in November. Because Thanksgiving.
Oh, God. Can you imagine the con badges? Here today, gone tomorrow. For some of the turkeys that attend. Oh, what's that? Are the cons over the weekend? Okay, so we'll give you a pass for Friday and Saturday, and Sunday we'll have you for dinner. Sounds good. Enjoy your time.
I think pretty much all of wintertime would be off limits to turkeys. They're kind of popular around that time of year.
Mm-hmm. So what time of year do you have your convention?
What? Spring.
Well, you've got to be careful about Easter, because those rabbits are horning in on our territory.
Fair enough.
Well, you should also... I don't know... If you're doing it in spring, and spring birds are kind of frisky, I don't know.
Bunny conventions are always really tricky, because you end up having to purchase two tickets, because you walk in with 100 bunnies, and you walk out with 200.
You get right. 200 if they were trying to use protection.
And if it's in March, you're going to end up with all these eggs all over the place.
That's true.
It's okay. It's okay, we can paint them and use them in salads and everything else. It'll be great.
Would birds eat... I think some birds would eat eggs.
I know chickens eat their own eggs, but
another security nightmare. That would be another security nightmare, because, you know...
Yeah, who would our security birds be?
Griffins.
Oh, that's always your choice. But
there's a bias there.
There's another one. The cassowary.
Okay, explain.
Explain.
The 6-foot-tall terror birds that kill everything they come across?
But I think that does not make them good for security. That does not qualify them for
security. Guys, what is the name of that giant bird that can kick you to death? Is it an ostrich? The
cassowary. Emu. There's emu.
It's an emu. Emu, yes.
So the cassowary is the one that doesn't have fear of people.
Let's make a secretary and call him just secretary.
I think emu would be good for security. Emu is the one that you show up when you need the enforcers to come and, kill everyone.
Well, you put a secretary bird in charge because they root out all the snakes. And then you've got the big heavies, the cassowaries and the emus when you need backup.
So what would the griffins be in charge of?
The convention, duh.
I like you, Sable. I like you a lot.
Since we're at that point, since you're already starting to creating character or putting birds in jobs, I would start to do the game called Character Creation Con Edition. I did it the last few shows, and like last week, I would like to create some bird characters with you again. And the game is simple. I'll tell you a role, and then we try to cast a bird species for the role together. And the security question was already answered. I had this chief of who would be the chief of security?
The secretary bird.
Yeah. Okay.
I can second that one. Yes.
Okay. That's good. That's good. But for real, who would be the chairman or the chairwoman of CON?
Griffin. Me. Me.
Well, we already have one who's qualified on this podcast. Sable, let me ask you really quickly, though. Would you really want to take on a second convention, deep down?
It's okay. Hey, you're acting like he is the only one that's... I mean, he's a con chair, but I've been on the board before and been on staff for a long time. We both have experience with helping to run a
convention. Anybody who's eager to jump to the position of a convention chairman does not know what they're getting themselves into.
I'm not... No.
Storm has a really good point, so it's definitely not going to be him.
So, despite Griffins, who are, I think they could be chairmen, of course, but despite besides them, who
thank
what
you for the
kind
group,
of
vote of confidence?
What kind of bird could be an what other kind of bird could be a chairman or defeats a chairman? Okay.
The bald eagle?
No.
No. They are drawing.
No.
I enjoy the symbolic leadership of that. I approve of that.
We do not need a DTD running a damn bird con.
Yes, that's the type of chairman you want. The faintly ridiculous, overly proud type, because they're just a face. They're not doing any of the actual work.
It all depends on how you structure.
Then why not something like a Quetzal or something that is, you know, very bold and beautiful and very iconic?
Like a Putu.
Okay, so if you want something that's just going to sit there and look pretty and just be, you know, a showpiece, why don't you just get a Finch to little sit there and they could sit on the shoulder of whoever actually has the balls to run the con?
A Finch would be
just whisper in their ear.
Finch would be good, but I think we're missing the lilac-breasted roller. Those guys make good con chairs.
Okay. I think, in line with the Putu comment, Fleeks, I think a Putu would make a good DJ.
Hey, that works. Oh, man, that works.
I can see that.
It also fills my opinion, the role of my opinion on DJs, but yes.
Really?
Putus are cute. They're pretty cute. So you're saying that DJs are cute?
No, I'm saying they look stupid.
Hey. Well,
the problem with DJ is that everybody is a DJ. You just put those letters before your name and create a iPod playlist and you're good.
Exactly. Especially with, you know, programs that auto mix for you now.
I think you're having like a lot of professional DJs hating you right now for that sentence.
I'm okay with it. Man. There's no such thing as a professional DJ.
I think all of the professional DJs are going, yes, thank you.
There's a difference between, listen.
Oh, yeah,
there's
there's
a difference between a DJ and a DJ. Let's just be honest here. It's just the way it is. And you can tell, depending on what you're dealing with within the first 3 minutes of them being on stage at a con, generally. Now, there's exceptions to every rule, but
There's music creators, and then there's people who spin tracks. That's it.
Yeah. Well, like on
one's
the,
not a DJ. One is an actual producer.
But we're getting off topic.
okay, yeah, the Putu is the DJ. Okay, we got that. Who are... Because most of the cons are like in convention hotels or in hotels or in convention centers, and there have to be... You need hotels for a con, that's what I want to say. And what kind of bird would be a hotel boss?
The heads of the hotel themselves?
Yeah, a head of a hotel, yeah.
You need somebody very industrious because they're going to have to micromanage everything. They're going to have to be good as a go-between. So, what are the
very
the birds
business
in
leader
Africa
type
that
people
make those massive nests?
A stork.
Those will work. Yeah.
Or because it's more apartment style, mud warblers.
Yeah, there we go.
A mud? Are you fucking kidding me?
No.
What are we running bird con at Motel 6?
Yes.
Seriously.
Yeah. Why not? They have to be. I have a knowledge about interior.
Of course it's going to be a mud warbler, because in furry conventions, they always let us into hotels that are much nicer than we deserve.
Oh, I completely agree. If we actually could have a con at Motel 6 and it was big enough, that would be the perfect venue.
So the hotel boss, the hotel staff member, is going to be a mud warbler way out of his league.
Oh, man, okay. But wouldn't they be more like architects or something, but someone who built the hotel? I go with the stork, really, because that somehow fits a stork, long neck and a suit. I can imagine that.
Okay. I've got to ask, Fleeks, if you don't mind, I'm going to ask this, okay? Who would be the convention's lawyer? Because every con's got to have some kind of guy, at least on the board, that knows something about the law, or if you're big enough, you actually have a lawyer.
We already talked about it in the on the first character creation. It's Peacock. All attorneys are Peacock.
Everything to do with our legal system.
It's Peacocks.
I think after this week, we all know the answer to that. It's going to be a badger.
A badger?
Yes. If you've been following the fandom adopting the boozy barrister at all.
I have not, no.
No, I missed that.
Okay. Short backstory. After the RMFC issues, a actual lawyer found out about it and did a legal critique of the cease and desist that RMFC sent and made a whole bunch of jokes. It was hilarious. Put it on his Twitter, and then some furry somewhere found it and it exploded. And within 24 hours, not only did this guy have artwork, like character sheets, ref sheets, like seven different pieces of art I've seen so far. This has been the last 48 hours.
I need to see this breakdown of...
He went from 400 followers on Twitter to 1,500 the next day, which was yesterday.
All furries.
Almost all of which are furries. And now other lawyers that follow the boozy barrister are getting a whole bunch of followers, and their Twitter recommended follow me are now all animals.
Oh, no.
I don't know. That could be both good and bad for the law firm.
And the boozy barrister has been, of course, taking this in stride and engaging and it's been hilarious, and it's one of the best stories that have come out of the furry fandom in the last month.
Never underestimate the power of furries to take a situation that can be drama-filled and turn it into something that is hilarious.
Yeah, so on Twitter or just his blog, look up the Boozy Barrister, and this is
lawyersandliquor.com. Oh my god.
There you go.
This is... Oh, I'm already in love. Okay, this is reading material for later. Anyways, I'm sorry.
Yes. So, sorry none of you guys have seen it, but and of course, lawyers are generally not part of staff, so of course it makes sense for our lawyer to be a badger, not actually a bird.
Fair enough. Okay.
Okay, so we'll grant one exception.
Right.
Yeah, because that. we'd be approaching the firm, not necessarily having an in-house.
All right.
Wow. Okay.
Yes. That article. Read that article.
Lawyers' liquor sobriety is sanctionable.
Okay.
Fleeks, did you have any more positions that you needed filled?
Yeah. I need more positions filled. It's a nerd, because on FurryCons, we have to admit the furry fandom is a very nerdy area. You know what I mean?
Yes.
And we have quite a lot of computer experts, nerds, and comic fans and stuff. What would be a nerd, stereotype nerd? What kind of bird would be that?
A nerd? A really smart nerd? Hmm.
Yeah, a nerdy nerd that nerds about nerd stuff.
A cockatoo.
I think
with nerd glasses.
No, hold on. It's got to be the magpie, because they're the ones flocking to the new shiny thing and having no idea what it is.
And they do it in mass, too, just kind of like how nerds travel. Yeah. They travel in mass all together, freak out over something, and then the moment someone normal shows up, they all run away.
Yeah, I can totally imagine how they are like picking that. Oh yeah. Oh, that. Oh god, that comic. Oh my god. Oh, that's rare. Oh my god, I need it. And then they're fighting about it.
The first edition comic. Oh my god. Yeah, that stuff.
Oh, Fluff, the new iPhone. Let's go flock to it.
Yeah. Let's wait 27, you know, hours to get an iPhone I could have bought the next day just because I want to get it before anyone else got it. Find out it needed a software update anyway.
Yeah, pretty much.
So, oh, yeah, that was it for the character creation game, I think. Except you're having ideas for roles or...
Well, yeah, because you're missing some key convention roles. The head of registration...
Yep, that's true.
Pigeon.
You want to put a pigeon in charge of the head of registration?
I'm legally required to say that the head of registration needs to be a hippogriff.
Okay, why?
Because Furry Fiesta's head of security is, or head of registration is a unicorn, and would kill me if I didn't say hippogriff.
Okay, so we need the fantasy creature, the established, because as of last episode, griffins are apparently real, but we need to have the fantasy creature running the head of registration.
Like hippogriff, yeah.
Yeah, because hippogriffs aren't real, like we learned in the last episode, like poor...
All right.
You have no idea how much liquor I had to consume to be able to accept that.
Hey, hippogriff running registration? I could tolerate that.
And the great thing about hippogriffs is if they're not real, Storm and I could fix that.
Yeah, that's true.
Just find a horse. A very willing horse.
Oh, trust me, if we don't have a hippogriff at this con, by the following one, we'll have several to pick from.
I'm sorry. My tactfulness just went out the window.
Sorry, I had to laugh. I'm so sorry. Okay. I'm good.
I've listened to the last three episodes.
Oh, very good.
Once we started talking about me being on, I figured I should know what I'm getting into.
Yeah, that you made the educated choice there. So you probably know what bug, bird, or bluff is.
Yes.
What is it?
It's where you give us three items. One of them is the name of a bug. One of them is the name of a bird. And one of them is lies! Damn lies!
That was a pretty good explanation.
It totally is.
Thank you.
Pretty spot on.
So I'm not going to start you off right away. Even though you're familiar with it, I'm not going to throw you into the deep end. I'm going to have one of our other co-hosts here start and be the example for you. But you get to pick who goes first.
Storm.
Okay.
Fuck you! I thought you were my friend.
Griffin's got to stick together.
Yeah, apparently. Stick together.
Throw each other under the bus.
Okay. I believe in you. Based on your performance in the last few, you should get this one first try.
I appreciate that, and you owe me a drink if I do.
Okie dokie.
Let's start.
Bug, bird, or bluff. Mot-mot. Cuckoo-bee. Couscous. Storm. Which is which?
I know the fake.
Really? Mot mot, cuckoo bee.
Core, I have to say,
couscous.
Core, I have to say,
is fake.
Sorry, what is it, Storm?
Couscous is fake.
Correct.
A very tasty fake. I have.
Yeah, I was like, really, really. Okay, so give me my final two choices: mot mot, and what's the other one?
Cuckoo bee.
Mot mot and cuckoo bee.
Cuckoo bee.
Cuckoo bee. A mot-mot bird?
Correct.
Hey, 100%.
And the cuckoo bee is a bee.
So, I guess Sable owes me that drink.
I can deal with that. I'll get you a Perrier.
Hey, I'm looking forward to it.
There you go.
Might just have to come down to TFF and you can get it to me then, but... During the 5 nanoseconds of break, you get his contract.
Right.
No, I need. So yeah.
I like how I offered to buy him water so he can come to my convention now.
All right, well, Storm showed you how. Are you ready, Sable?
Yep.
Ready. Okay. Diggerby. Petitim. Diard's Trogon. Diggerby. Petitim. Diard's Trogon.
Diard's Trogon sounds like a bird to me.
Correct.
Give me the other two again.
Diggerby. Petitim.
Okay. I want to say that the bee is going to be the bird, but that's lulling me into a false...
Well, no, you already said the Diard's Trogon is a bird.
Yeah, sorry. I want to say the bee is the bug, except that's lulling me into a false sense of security because the first bee was a bee.
Hey, it's up to you. You got to figure out which is which.
So I'm going to go with a bee being the bluff.
What? Oh, okay. The digger bee is a bee.
Okay.
And petitum is another type of couscous, just a different region.
Oh.
This leaves you, Fleeks. Are you ready?
Hit me.
Okay.
Hit me, baby, one more time.
Wassa Wassa. Braycon. Honey Guide. Wassa Wassa. Braycon or Bracon, not sure. And Honey Guide.
The last one was Honey Guide?
Yes.
I think I heard about Wassa Wassa already. I think that's another kind of couscous, probably. I just guessed it. So I think Wassa Wassa is fake?
Correct.
So what were the other two?
Bracon or Braycon. And Honey Guide.
Honey Guide? I would say Honey Guide. And the other one again?
Except Bracon. Honey Guide.
Wait, I'm about to say that Honey Guide is the bird, because I think it's that bird that leads bears to honey. So it's a bird, Honey Guide.
Is that your final answer?
Yeah.
Because you're correct.
Hey!
And Bracon's a bug. And yes, Wassa Wassa is another type of couscous.
I thought so.
Can I ask you, try to trick me
with honey or bee, because the other two bees were correct, and you brought the honey into to confuse me.
And okay, guys, seriously.
I have a bird bug and bluff for corn.
What the hell is couscous?
It's food.
It's food.
Couscous is people!
Look at Wikipedia. It's an Arabic kind of bulgur, but it's not bulgur, but it's similar. It's like you could call it Arabian rice.
It's quite delicious, to be honest with you.
And now I have, for Corno, I have a couscous-free bird bug or bluff.
Ah, okay. There's no couscous, so I'm not very interested.
No couscous. Hey!
Couscous is a dish of small steamed balls of semolina, usually served with a stew spooned on top.
Okay. I see the picture, Core Share. That makes more sense.
And it's not contained in the next question, so Core, are you ready?
I suppose.
Okay. give me just a second. I will go close to the microphone and whisper the terms in your ear.
Okay.
Killdeer, Blowdrill, Houseborer.
Killdeer's a bird.
Okay. Yes, right.
What were the other two?
Blowdrill, Houseborer.
Houseborer is... God, I took a second just to question myself, and now I'm in doubt. Damn it. Houseborer is a bug.
Right. It's a brown beetle. And Blowdrill was a fake.
Sweet.
Sounds like a Pokemon.
It totally does. I thought he said Beedrill at first, and I'm like, no, he didn't say Beedrill.
Blau drill.
Well, if okay. anything, we did learn one thing today. We learned a whole bunch of different types of couscous. Enjoy.
Yes.
Yes. Mm. This show is always meant to be partially educational, so that way we can keep getting our Verdanian grants.
Yes.
Another kind of couscous is, by the way, tabbouleh.
I know, I just it didn't have as fun of a name to give. Not like wasa wasa
thank you for making Thank you for making me hungry, Cor.
You're welcome.
That late at night.
Okay, couscous, that picture of couscous literally looks like they just took a bunch of random shit and threw it in a pot and said, here you go!
It's Middle Eastern jambalaya.
I give you a better pick.
Well, it's like jambalaya, where you have a bed of something and then you pour random stuff on top of it and call it food.
Okay. Fair enough.
Yeah. I give you a better pick because you don't see the couscous because of all the vegetables.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
Welcome to Bird.Live 25, where we're showing each other couscous pictures. Enjoy it.
None of you who are listening get to see them.
I can assure you, this looks like the finest sawdust money can buy.
Oh, but it's delicious.
It's so delicious. But, Storm, hit us with the audience questions. I think it's about time.
Sable, are you ready for questions from our listeners?
My soul is ready. My body is weak.
Okay.
My body is actually ready.
Yeah,
the mind is willing, but the flesh is spongy and weak.
Okay. All right. So, first question comes from a certain black griffin known as Storm, and the question is this. What is the funniest thing you've ever experienced directly or indirectly at a con?
I can see this being a good one with the whole head of security thing.
From the staff perspective, the funniest thing I've encountered is having two children in our lost and found.
How did they end up there?
After I was in the middle of something and I heard a panicked call over the radio from our volunteer lead, desperately needing security, and our vice chair was nearby and went there, and they had found two children. They didn't seem to be part of the con, but they were little children, enamored by the fursuits.
Oh, no.
So our vice president, our vice chair, in a fit of desperation, took them down to con ops and just started giving them plushed animals from our events. Meanwhile, we then alerted the hotel. So when a very, very panicked-looking woman came up to the front desk, before she said anything, they said, "We've got them. They're this way." There was a mother stopped by the hotel, was not involved with the convention at all, and the kids followed the fursuiters up the escalator.
Oh no!
Not bad.
Well, so, you're a little kid. You see giant, fursuiters wandering around. You have to go see what's going on.
Correct. So for some time, we had two children in Lost and Found.
Nobody
about can top that.
I think your vice chair at the time handled that very, very well.
Quite. Especially since he's a nerd and doesn't do social interaction well.
Just putting the kids in Lost and Found.
I mean, this is literally the setup of every fish out of water trying to take care of children movie you've ever met. That's that type of person of, I have no idea what children are, now I have to take care of them and deal with them with no preparation.
Okay, at least he thought to take them to the con store and start giving them plushies.
The con ops pulled apart all of the event bags full of stuffed animals and just started showering the kids with them.
If he was to ever become a parent, like surprise parent, you know, for whatever happened that reasons, he'd probably be a very good dad. Just based off that one sole experience, I can make that judgment.
Yeah, that sounds awesome. That really does. Okay.
He'd be very panicky at first, but I think he would do a good job.
Well, if we're being honest, there's no rule book that tells you how to be a perfect parent. It's just trial and error. It really is.
I've been to the bookstores. There are dozens of them, right?
Oh, yeah. There's lots of books on parenting.
Comprehensive and complete.
But it still comes down to, you know, the choices you make, yeah.
Yeah, and whether it works for one kid does not work for another.
But the books tell me that they're perfect.
Oh, well, they can go cluck themselves.
How do you change the oil in this thing?
Especially when it comes to rearing grifflets. Next question. This is a question for everyone. Okay. I'm just going to intermix them for sake of time. Do you like, hate, or don't mind it when a cartoon puts teeth on birds?
Depends on the cartoon.
They are adorable on Fish Crow.
Yeah, I was going to reference Fish Crow.
Yeah, but I absolutely don't mind. It depends on the style, really. If a cartoonist does teeth on in a cartoony style, why not? Why not?
I've seen it done in like cartoony like things where like the bird will have a sudden mischievous and very toothy smile, yeah. Even though canonically they don't have teeth. Just the surprise element.
Yeah, that's
where I come in, which is, if the teeth are pointy, I'm fine with it. If they are human teeth, I am not.
Oh, God, no.
No, I like pointy teeth. I like pointy teeth on birds.
Yeah, because then they're just proto-birds.
Right, but I also like it if, like, it's a cartoon and they use teeth to help accentuate an expression.
Yeah,
because the beak's exactly. Already bending in ways that it otherwise would never bend. Then it's like, okay, what the hell? I mean, you're already causing the beak to bend and stuff, so yeah, have fun with it. What the hell? Okay. Yeah. So, next question comes from Regde. And the question is, if you could name, because I just asked you to name the funniest thing, what would you say the best time you had when you were running Furry Fiesta, the best thing that ever happened?
Making Path, our previous con chair, cry on stage.
Good cry or bad cry?
Good cry. Aww. Because he was stepping down. He didn't know that we were planning this. I called the board president and the board up on stage, presented him with a thank you plaque for his 5 years of service, and really expressed our gratitude for all that he's done for not just the staff, but our convention itself. And we got him to cry on stage.
That's true.
That is awesome. That really is. That is a great, great, great story. And people got to remember, FurCons in general, with very few exceptions, are all nonprofits, volunteer-run organizations. It's the labor of love.
Yes.
So
none of us are paid.
Yeah.
Fiesta is entirely non-profit or not for profit. We're a 501c7. So.
Well, I personally, I do work for a profit. I work for a profit of hugs. So as long as I get a certain number of hugs at every IFC, I'm okay.
Yeah.
So, a follow-up question from Regde is: what is a suitable number of toes on bird feet that you prefer? So basically what he's asking is how many number of toes on a bird's foot is acceptable. This is for everyone.
I prefer 3+1, 3 in front, 1 behind.
2+2.
Two plus
but
two?
Generally, it depends on the bird. I want accurate bird feet toe configuration.
For griffins, I don't mind 4+1. But for birds that are not griffins, generally I prefer 3+1.
It's true.
Four plus one is somehow a bit weird.
But on a griffin, it looks more like a hand. So
yeah, and on a griffin, so much bigger. You know, needing more. Well, depending on the griffin, of course. But
it needs more surface to grab with. So I would think four plus one would work.
Yeah, they need to dig for gold, like you learned.
And it depends on Anthro versus Feral. Feral, sure. 3+1. Anthro, 4+1.
Yeah, I'm somewhere between 2+2 and 4+1. So somewhere in there works for me. If you go above that, it looks weird. If you go below that, it's kind of weird.
I'm siding with Sable. I'm going with the 3+1. That looks most natural to me for normal birds.
I have a Griffin character who has 2-2 configuration.
That's fine.
I just reposted again.
Okay. Yeah, that looks fine.
And at this point, I'm the only pure bird left on the podcast.
I will say a woodpecker forever.
Griffin's resplendent.
That's right. Take over one bird at a time. And
you know, I'm just gonna have to call in the army of Sergals.
Oh God, help us all if you do that. I swear to God.
Well, actually, the problem core is that you're the only hybrid. See, griffins are the normal, natural species, and then birds are the half griffin, half harpy hybrid.
See, that was my theory too, and I completely agree with you, Sable. Core wanted to go all purist on me and argue about it, and then threw a fit and started going after Cheetos and cotton candy and popcorn and all other shit. So I was like, oh, okay, fine.
Well, I mean, look, all the parts are there. It's just like cats are half griffin, half manticore.
Yep. So, yeah, I agree.
Griffin scientists have been working on this theory for ages. It's solid.
I think I'm having an aneurysm right now.
Yeah. Well, why do you have an aneurysm together?
Well, why you have an aneurysm? I've got another question for Sable.
Yes.
This comes from Eclipse, our resident griffin expert. And the question is, do you get to enjoy the fruits of your labor and relax at all during TFF? Or is it all work or no play?
It's pretty much all work. That doesn't mean that there isn't satisfaction in seeing the con come together and seeing that we put on this amazing experience for our attendees. I mean, that's why I do it. That for many of the people that come to Furry Fiesta, this is the one time in the year that they can feel whole, that they can feel included and happy and among people that they can relate to. Seeing that makes it worth it, but it's all work. It's nonstop. And that's for senior staff, things like head of security and con chair, at least with Furry Fiesta, especially for the operational staff and most leads, we try to make sure that you have shifts so that our staff can have time to enjoy the con. But me, no, never.
Yeah, I'm the head of volunteering at IFC and have been the head of volunteering since year one. And pretty much once I show up, I get my radio, I check in, and I get my clipboard. I use to track people, and I don't turn that stuff in till the con's over, so I'm on duty nonstop.
Right.
So
I know the feeling.
The only convention I myself have ever been to didn't last. It was called Furries Unlocked, and it was here in Utah, and it was a furry gaming convention. And for the 3 years that it ran, I was security/EMT for them. So I never actually had a full year to myself just, you know, doing the con. I also had to volunteer. Like, I can't not go to something like that and want to give something back, you know?
Yeah.
Right.
I understand. I don't have any problem going to a convention and not giving back, but when I became staff for Furry Fiesta, that became my duty. It's my responsibility to make sure that our attendees have the best time I possibly can provide.
As I like to look at it, like, and people kind of give me this weird look when I say this, but, you know, IFC is a labor of love for me, and I show up, I work, it's my kind of work, it's the town I help make the magic happen. Mm-hmm. And then when I go to other cons, such as, you know, MFF, yeah, if they need something real quick, someone needs something moved or watch a door for a moment, okay, yeah, fine.
Yeah. But
overall, I'm there to have fun. It's my relaxation con. It's my socializing con. It's my chance to be an attendee. People forget how it being an attendee is after a while.
Yeah, I'm the same way. Absolutely.
All right.
Escape conventions.
Well, yeah, and on that note, you guys should all come out to Furry Fiesta. I think we put on a pretty decent convention.
Yeah, make me a guest of honor, then I come.
I have been wanting to go to Furry Fiesta since probably year two or three, and it's kind of been on my goal list, so I really hope to.
I want to as well. We should totally record the podcast there. I have a bird that life recording. That would be awesome.
Sable, you're going to have to set up a stage for us. We'll do improvisation and we'll do an actual live show on stage.
We generally have several podcasts record at Fiesta. You wouldn't be the first.
Sweet. Oh, there you go.
With live audience participation?
Mm-hmm.
Cool.
Hey, that could be something fun, but we'd be the only bird podcast there, I dare take it. And there's other podcasts with birds, but none are exclusively bird themed. So we have a niche. We can market. Ha ha! All right. Got just a couple more questions to wrap things up here. Let's see. Next question comes from a person I lovingly refer to as Peck Peck. And the question is, how many Sables exist out there?
For birds, there are two of us, both of which are griffins. For others, we know of four. That there are rumors of more, and a few other people have Sable in their handle, like Sable hooves, but aren't actually Sable. That's just part of their handle. So we've got two griffins, a chimera, and a panda, which is basically a chimera. The three of us generally go to FWA. I missed it this year, sadly, because of work. But generally, three Sables go, two griffins and our chimera, and we have a little SableCon. It's awesome because it confuses everyone. And my favorite comment was the first year we all got together, Sable, the chimera, saw my badge name, pulled me aside, and introduced me to the people that she was around because she had been hurt hearing rumors of this other Sable. And then I introduced her to the other Sable, and then that became awesome.
Oh, man.
And then the greatest thing was that when I mentioned this to people, the reaction, isn't there any drama because you're all named Sable? No, all of us think it's awesome.
Why wouldn't you? I mean, you just met kin, basically.
Yeah,
pretty much.
It's like running into a long lost family member. Like, you know, you visit your home country where you're origin from, and you find your natural family.
Correct.
So
early on, before I knew him in person, Sable and I fought over Sable Griffin on various websites, but that was before we knew each other.
It's nice that you came to a peace treaty.
Yeah.
What do you do for work? I forgot to ask.
I work information security.
Yes, a very booming field. Very booming.
Right. Exactly.
Okay. Final question. This question comes from Drezzle, and it actually is a challenge. Challenges are lots of fun. We all have to participate in this. Have all of you listened to the Darwing Duck opening
by chance? I know it from
not many years.
Okay. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to post it in the chat so you can review it real quick. And basically, our job is to, where you see the letter X, the letter Y, and the letter Z, you've got to insert your own spin on it. You got to come up with your own word that you feel would best fit in.
Oh, so it's ad libs.
Correct. So, I am the tear that flaps in the night. I am the griffin
that
fights your mama. Something like that.
Okay.
That was terrible, but
I mean, that's what you
do. Let me try. Also, I think that isn't the intro thing. That's actually something he says whenever he appears on the scene, Duckling Duck. You know, but yeah, I saw it a lot as kids. So and I would say how was it? How was the start?
I am the terror that flaps in the night. I am the griffin that squawks your flock. Or flock.
I am the chair.
Either way.
I am the master. Zathory.
I am the tear that flaps in the night. I am the griffin that flocks the bok.
Or I am the musky husky that ruins
no.
your party.
No!
No!
Oh, God. Too many real memories. No!
I am the terror that flaps in the night. I am the avian that is taking over your fandom, Core Raven.
Ooh.
Yeah, all dark and serious. The pattern.
That technically wraps it up.
Yeah.
I have a last question to you. And that, where is it? Would you rather?
Oh, no.
Be a fly. No, would you rather be a condor-sized hummingbird or a hummingbird-sized condor?
Oh, condor-sized hummingbird, hands down. I mean, no question.
Oh,
hummingbirds
fuck, yes.
are beautiful. Condors are hideous. And being a giant hummingbird, yes, please. I will terrorize everyone.
I will join Sable in his terror of the world.
I completely agree with Sable. I would rather be a condor-sized hummingbird.
I mean,
if you think about surviving in nature, maybe a hummingbird-sized condor wouldn't be that bad because you need less food, you know?
Oh, yes. I totally understand that being a condor-sized hummingbird is absolutely being a monster in a horror movie, and you are not surviving the night.
Yeah, I mean,
but
I mean,
awesome.
Where do you find flowers that big? Where do you find flowers that big? You could like eat the whole flower field.
You kidding? You kidding? When you're that big, you break into the fucking grocery store and you go get the shit in there.
Yeah. Well, at that point, but, breaking into the liquor store and going for the mead, because that's honey, right?
for survival reasons, I take the hummingbird-sized condor.
You're
I'm
going
not
to be
easy.
Eaten by a squirrel.
If you're going to be logical about it, yes.
I can
you would survive more, because a hummingbird-sized, a condor-sized hummingbird would probably not be able to circulate blood through its body fast enough to be able to survive. If we're going scientifically, but we're not. We're having fun with this.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I have to. I am a bit more pragmatic in that case, but yeah, you find easier food because find where are the gigantic flowers then?
Think about it this way,
you know.
Instead of just being ordinary condor-sized hummingbirds, we're blood-sucking condor-sized hummingbirds. We feed off people.
Right? Yeah. You know this is how it's going.
Then I would go condor-sized hummingbird, but that wasn't the question. I didn't
we're
talk
we're
about
gonna have
it
two
is
vampire
now.
Teeth for some reason.
For fuck's
sake. Because I kicked it out the last time, would you rather be a flying ostrich or a flightless peregrine?
A flying ostrich, because you're
flying ostrich.
Some serious ass.
Yeah.
What would you do if you were a flightless peregrine? Just sit there and mope?
Pretty much.
I think the answer is clear. That's why I did not choose that question for today.
Question. You're just sitting in the zoo being looked at if you're the peregrine. No, give me the flighted ostrich. I will
exactly.
terrorize
a miracle of science.
I will terrorize some traffic.
Okay. Yeah, kicking people from the air. Boy, I would be. Oh god, I would be. Ostriches are already very. I mean, and the flying ostrich is like, oh, humanity, brace yourself.
Yeah. Pretty much, you know, they'd swoop down from the sky and beat up your fucking kid. You don't give me your burger, you're getting a peck to the face, motherfucker.
Well, okay. Once again, cassowaries are much more of that.
That is true.
All right, so, Sable.
Yes.
Or Marabous.
This is... the last segment of the podcast here, so we want to hand it over to you.
Squawk.
He's doing us proud, Core. He's doing us proud.
That wraps it up,
he's an
right?
inspiration Core? To society.
That's right.
The just as an aside, an amusing story. During opening ceremonies this year, I get up on stage. I was called up by a path as kind of part of the handover, and he asked if I had any words to say. And the first thing I say is, squawk! And half of opening ceremonies squawked back at me. The other half looked totally confused. I had no idea what was going on.
Oh my gosh.
Hey, I think we're going to hijack TFF. We're taking it over.
We got this.
We got the right people in charge. Avian Corruption.
Well, we will see you in 2018 at Texas Feathery Fiesta.
That's
yes.
Right.
You better.
Hey, as long as you hook us up with the right accommodation, we'll take care of you.
I can get you a sweet pre-reg price.
Ooh.
Full price?
Spoken like a true salesman.
Thank you so much for joining us. You can catch us on Facebook.com/BirdLifePodcast, Twitter @BirdLifePodcast, and on Telegram, t.me/BirdLife. Remember, the bird is spelled with a U. You can subscribe to us on iTunes, Google Play, or via the RSS feed. If you enjoyed this episode, consider going to the website bird.life and kissing the magpie. Kissing the magpie will take you to our Patreon page where, if you like, you can subscribe to donate a dollar or more to the show every month. That helps keep us ad-free and pays for the website, because I would rather beg for money at the end of the show instead of stick an advertisement in the middle of the show, which just feels awkward and uncomfortable. Anyways, thank you again, and always be beeping.
Always be beeping. Or squawking, if you prefer squawking.
Always be squawking.
Chirp it up, motherfuckers. We're counting on you. Keep listening.
So, Sable, okay. Have you listened to this episode before? Not episode, but have you listened to our podcast before?
Yes, yes, yes. Have you listened to this episode we're recording right now before?
Have we done it already? Oh, my God. What's going on? I was already.
When was then? Just missed it.
We already recorded this episode. Oh, my God.
Look at it go.
It's a bit of time continuum.
I am the terror that flaps in the night. I am the squirrel. Why did I choose squirrel?
Why did you?
I am the squirrel. I am the squirrel that disturbs the bird feeder.
Okay.
Oh my God.
If you want to pronounce squirrel, just remember it's spelled SKWRL. Squirrel.
Squirrel.
It's the only word in the English language that doesn't have vowels.
Squirrel?
Squirrel.
Squirrel.